Welcome back, everyone, to the Xamarin.net community stand-up. This is going to be a good one today. I'm so excited. Look at these beautiful people that we have on. This should be hopefully one of the biggest and best .NET community stand-ups yet. Well, if you don't know what a .NET community stand-up is, and it's your first one because you saw Miguel tweeting about it, welcome. There's a few things that we like to do. These happen twice a week for ASP.NET, Visual Studio, Xamarin, Windows Desktop, and Languages and Runtime on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and the first Thursday of every month, even though it's not Thursday, it's Wednesday, because tomorrow's the 4th of July here in the States. We talk about all the awesome things that people in the community have been doing, have been building, have been sharing. And we also like to give you an insight into what is happening here at Microsoft and on the Xamarin team. And today we have the awesome iOS team led by Miguel up top over there, and Maddie's here to go through. So I'm James, if you don't know who I am. I'm a program manager, and we'll go around and we'll introduce ourselves before we go into the community link. So let's start with Maddie.
Awesome. I'm Maddie Legere. I'm a PM and I work on tooling for Xamarin Forms.
Now we'll head over to, let's see, I'll say it correct, Manuel de la Peña.
Yeah, perfect pronunciation. So I'm Manuel. I'm software engineer and I work on the iOS team, so that means doing bindings and making sure things work on iOS.
Yeah, Alex?
Hey, same, I'm Alex Soto. I work at the Xamarin iOS team and make the product better.
And Miguel, who are you?
I think that these guys are selling themselves short. These are the folks that make sure that every single capability that Apple brings to their platforms is surfaced in a .NET friendly way, that we have C# bindings, that they're fantastic, that they're tested. These are the magicians in charge. And, so that's what these folks are. And, I've been working on Xamarin for a long time, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to have the team on. You know, we had last month or the month before, we had John Dick on to talk about the Android X work that was going on behind the scenes and like the awesomeness that's going into the migration and into the packages there. So it's great to have this venue to see all the amazing people that get to work on the product that all of our developers get to use. So we're going to go first through the community links. Maddie's going to go through those and be like 10, 15 minutes, all the awesome things happening in the community. And then we'll come back to the iOS team and go through it. And also feel free to ask questions in the chat room as well. Go for it there. Go ahead, Maddie, take it away.
Awesome. And I'll keep my eye on the chat, but feel free to stop me if I miss anything. So first of all, feel free to follow along. We're using the urllist.com/Xamarin-standup-July19. So you can follow along with all the links we're about to go through with the community and some other things at the end of the Xamarin Forms 4.1 release notes. So jumping right in, first of all, happy July. It is Xamarin UI July, which is basically back in December, February, because of Valentine's Day. Luis had come up with an idea of doing Xamarin Month. So someone posted a blog post every single day for Xamarin Month, and Stephen Thwissen has decided that we should do it again in July. It's been a couple months, and do it for a UI focus. So folks have signed up for slots for every day this month. It's already full, which is awesome. And these folks are great members of our community and are going to start posting about, UI things, whatever it is, whether it's shell and visual or tools or just some nifty thing that they've done. For every day this month. So a lot of great content will be coming out, and hopefully we'll be able to show a lot of them next month. So there's already two, which is great. The first one is by Luis himself, and he is doing design tools for Xamarin Forms. So the first time I read this, I was like, oh, he'll talk about a couple of the hot reload things, maybe. It is crazy. First of all, there's a bunch of NuGet packages about just good things you can add, like cards and animations and FF image loading, which I know is really popular. And then we talk about custom controls, including some of our awesome vendors like Syncfusion and Telerik and Grile, who have been working on this forever and have some amazing controls, and Aurora. And then previews and hot reloads you can use. And then other extensions that help you out when you're building UIs for Xamarin Forms. So this is a really great article. I do Xamarin Forms tools, and I've read this through four times now, just trying to figure out what I can steal from these great ideas and great products that are out there.
Yeah, so, I saw this article as well. It's a really good article. In fact, I think I even retweeted it. I tend not to retweet too much to spam, but this was really a good piece. Really good piece. It has all kinds of very interesting pointers, and you know, once you are ready to graduate from the simple samples, this is a great way of spicing up your app.
Yeah, and it's always, there's so much happening in the community. We'll talk about like blog posts where it's like, here's one, and then it's like, you know, it's good to see them all come together.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much, and it's cool because every month there's more stuff to add to this kind of stuff. So
yeah, those two in particular, the one that you have on the screen, those are really nice. The shared transition one.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a pain to get it right. And I remember when this was in its infancy and it was like, well, here's an idea. Maybe we can make this work. So it's very nice to see this mature. And the same thing for Xam animation. Yeah, these are really good. It's a good list of resources.
Yeah, it's awesome. Cool. All right. The next one is by Steven, who is, you know, heading off the July UI, Xamarin UI July. Oh my gosh. And this one is about using base pages for XAML, which if you follow me on Twitter, this was something I asked about a few months ago on how many people do this. Turns out more than I thought. And the idea is that you put all of your navigation and such in a base page, which is kind of what we do for you in Shell. But if you don't want to use Shell or you have an existing app and you're trying to abstract out things that, you know, already exist, he basically puts all this stuff into a base page and then uses it on all the other content views and pages and anything else that he has in his app. And he makes this really beautiful sample banking app down at the bottom here. So all the code's on GitHub as always. And if you're looking at, you know, ways to reuse a lot of your code, especially like your tab bars and your title bars, this is a really good way to do it. So definitely check this one out. All right, next. Ooh, this is an app that people actually just shipped with Xamarin. So it is Daniel Causer and the Toronto meetup, like meetup.com basically. They decided that they wanted a better way to get feedback from attendees for their meetups. So it hooks into the meetup API. And as an organizer, you can connect with your, you know, the attendees and publish all your surveys and see all of that data that you get back. And as a user, you can download the app and actually rate the meetups that you've gone to. It's also cool because there's a way to give prizes, which is a lot of fun. So it's a Xamarin app, and you can download it now and use it with your meetups if you're a meetup organizer in your area. Cool. So Daniel also had a really good blog a week ago, end of June. And he was talking about just some tips and tricks that he's picked up using SQLite in Xamarin Forms. So there's a bunch. So he talks a lot about performance, which I know is a big thing with databases. Some other tricks like pragma queries, which I had no idea what they were until I read this. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And finally, just tools that he uses that help him make his life easier while he's developing Xamarin Forms and SQLite together. So he's been very busy this month, if you can tell. And I know this blog, he regularly posts on this blog with more stuff. Yeah, awesome. What is next? Oh my goodness, this one is really cool. So this is by Marco, marcofolio.net. And he has an app, or I guess like a plugin now, that scans your Xamarin apps for security vulnerabilities, which is, I know, something people are very concerned about, but there's not always an easy way to find out the best things to do. So he has this whole list of issues that he looks for in your app and your code, and it spits it out to you and tells you where it is and how you can fix it. So if you have been worrying about security, or if you're kind of moving your app from just an idea to maturity, this is a really good tool to download. And it's on GitHub, so you can go and take a look at all the source code, which is great. What is next? Oh, yes, Rendy's Google Maps styling. So Rendy has actually been doing a lot with maps lately, and this came out right after the last stand-up that we did, where he had done, like, dropping a marker and then showing how to do navigation. And now he's talking about styling. So if you don't like the way that default Google Maps looks, or it doesn't really fit the vibe of your app, they have ways to style it in Google Maps, but he actually talks you through how to do that in Xamarin Forms. There's also this tool called SnazMap, which has pretty predefined maps that you can use, which if you're not creative, like I'm not creative, you can just use that. So that is a really nifty and also very short blog. So the code is really simple. You can get started doing it up and running if you're using maps, especially Google Maps, right away. All right, Lazy View. So this is sharpnado.com, if you're not familiar, that's Jean-Marie. And basically, this is when you have a huge page, like a carousel view or a really long list view or something, and it takes a long time to load your page, sometimes folks, you know, think the app is crashed when they navigate if it takes like seconds to load up. So what he does here is build what he calls the lazy view, and it's just a content view that handles loading up a second view. And it's got an activity indicator so that that'll, you know, show people that it's loading. But there's not a lot of code, and it really can make your user experience a lot better. So folks don't think that your app is crashed and then quit it and reopen it or go back and navigate forward a couple times.
Maddie, can you show that a little bit? I mean, it's obvious that I need to start attending these stand-ups more often. This looks pretty sweet. Can you go to the XAML?
Yeah, this is the XAML for it, basically. So this is the view switcher.
So what is the
lazy views in there and where they?
Oh, there you go. So, got it. So okay. And then can you go to the lazy view just so I see what's going on here?
Yeah.
Wow, this is super cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Just come more often.
Yeah, the things that the people build in our community are absolutely astonishing. So like, yeah, doing stuff like this and being like, oh, you know, like here's how you can. You know, if you have 100 tabs, don't load all 100 tabs into memory all at once, right? Lazily load them up. So it's kind of cool to see that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Oh, this is very nice. All right, I'll take a look. This is fantastic.
Yeah. Also, the best part about his blog is that you can do all these different emoji reacts on the articles. So that's the best part. Okay. What's next? I know we're flying today, but we have a lot of really great things to get to with iOS. So, this is James's. So I'll let James talk about this one. But I remember James came up to me at the Xamarin booth at Build and was like, you can do the coolest thing in the entire world with ASP.NET dependency injection in Xamarin. And I was like, what? So, James, I'm glad you finally wrote a blog about it because I know you've been talking about it for a while. I don't know if you want to share your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I mean, this is if people follow me, they know I don't like dependency injection in IOC all that much. However, Glenn Codron from the ASP.NET team has sort of convinced me that maybe I should go all in on things. And the ASP.NET team, they have this whole hosting model of sort of structuring their application to read configuration files and adding dependencies. And they've broken it out of ASP.NET into this Microsoft.extensions library that's just a NuGet package. So this can work on anywhere. And you can have a consistent sort of host builder of your application. So as you browse through the application, what's nice is that all of these existing extensions will work with your app. So things like app configuration, logging, HTTP client factory, and then there's other things built on top of that, like Poly, for instance, which does automatic HTTP retries. So if you keep scrolling on there, let's see, keep scrolling. I think eventually I have like, here's the startup code. Keep going. Yeah, basically this, or that chunk right there. So this will say like, here's my host builder. I'm going to read my configuration from the command line. I'm going to configure all my dependencies. I'm going to add logging to it. And then through magic of dependency injection and constructor injection, all of that will be read into your application, and then you can start using those services like HTTP client factory and things like that. This blog took me maybe 10 hours to write, I think. There's a video that we did from Build. So like here you can add HTTP client, you can start using HTTP client, and then you get these logs. It's a little hard to see in that little screenshot, but there you go. So automatically you'll can start to use HTTP client factory, which does automatic logging of how long your HTTP requests were taking, everything like that, all for free. So you can take advantage of everything that they've been doing in ASP.NET in your Xamarin app. So it's a long read. If you got a long weekend coming up, have fun with that one. And you do need the latest previews because we made some optimizations in the Mono runtime to support this, which is good. So it was really, really fun to work on. Like I said, it's a long post, but I even go through how I like dependency inject my entire application. So I just say like new app and everything is injected. Like the page is injected, the app is injected, like services are injected. It's bananas. So it's super fun. So give that a read.
Yep. And the build session's at the bottom of the blog, so you can watch James and Glenn talk about it IRL, which is awesome. So, okay, what's next? Oh, so Charlene, Zamgirl, if you know her from her website, did a guest post on the Microsoft Xamarin blog, which is awesome, and talked about device resolutions. So I actually always struggle with this when I try to build apps, and I get really lazy, and I just do on idiom. And you know that tablets have different resolutions and screens have different resolutions. So what Charlene does was take you through like how to find a bunch of device sizes. And I know James and I had a tweet about this a while ago, looking for device sizes and then getting resource files based on the device size. So really dynamically scaling your UI, not just phone and tablet, but for all different sizes, and then applying it to XAML. So you can see it just how much better this looks. Like the boxes are just slightly more spaced out, and the button, like the word login, isn't like the middle 10th, it's like the middle 5th, and it just looks way nicer. So additionally, like, you know, on a small Android, like this is the Nexus, it's all on one screen, which is way better. So this is on the dev blogs. It's a really quick read too, and Charlene is really good with the sample code being interspersed, so it's pretty easy to follow along with. Cool. Next. Ooh, all right. So for all of you who watched WWDC, I'm sure you saw Swift UI. And Ryan Davis has been a big proponent on Twitter on C# for markup and continuous for hot reloading and a whole bunch of different stuff. And he actually joined on David Ornow's Twitch stream. And David's on vacation, so you can forgive him for not being here today. But he built out the login page for Zappy, which is the Xamarin Forms demo app that David's been working on for a while, with him live on Twitch. And he's using Continuous, which is Frank Krueger's, and Vincent H's C# for markup. And he kind of talks you through in this blog how easy it is to just get started building, you know, UIs fully in C#. Really short, not a lot of lines of code. And if you're one of those declarative code-based people, it is a really good tool to use if you're not a XAML fan. So definitely check this one out. I know this there are a lot of opinions on this if you've ever seen it brought up on Twitter. So feel free to fight in the chat. The next one, so this one is Martz. And he had talked about like your own home media server and how you can connect that with Xamarin Forms in an app. So if you're one of those people that like likes all your stuff to be yours and you're not a Spotify fan like I am, this is a really good way to find all your media files at home. And it's a Xamarin Forms app. So
yeah, it's a cool one because Martz worked. We talked about a few weeks ago. If you play that video, that's using VLCLib from VLC. So they have official .NET bindings and Xamarin support throughout, which is really awesome. So this is cool because it has all the, you know, SMB support through your local network to browse everything that's going on. So it's like browsing files from like a network share and then, you know, playing back video natively on the platform, which is like really awesome, like with very minimal code. So pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah. And I think we had brought this up in last month's URL kind of dump, blog dump, how they had come out with that. So if you do the URL list for June 19, you'll find the link to that original article. Mm-hmm. Sweet. Okay. So next is Gerald. And I talked about this a little bit last time, but I want to keep bringing it up because I love this. First of all, Gerald joined the Xamarin Forms team, which is awesome. Second of all, him and Steven have been working on snippets.dev, which is a website literally just for UI snippets. So beautiful, beautiful Xamarin UIs. And you share the code and you can go in and get ideas on it. This blog post is a little bit about their thought process behind it and how they're partnering with Planet Xamarin to get the community really involved and how you can just push things up on GitHub and it'll be merged on snippets. So super easy to get started. If you have a UI that, you know, you have been sitting on and you want to share it with other people, that's the way to do it. Okay. The final blog. Well, I guess we have two more blogs, but this is the final blog. is about improving performance with Xamarin Forms. It's by Leo Maris. And she has some small things that are really good tweaks to just make your app faster, and then some bigger things too. So, you know, one of the things is just like using the right dimensions of your pictures and using the right layouts. So instead of nesting stack layouts over and over, you know, how you can change some simple stack layouts to grids. And then there are things like enabling the compiler, which is one line, but if you didn't know it existed, you would have no idea that this is a really good way to, make your XAML compilation and your views load faster. Also image cells, which I always forget to do. So it's a good short blog post, and it's some things that you can go and kind of poke through your app and see what you haven't been doing that might actually give you a little bit more performance here and there. So the next two blogs are about the Xamarin Developer Summit, which is next week. It's in 8 days, which is so exciting. It's in Houston on next Thursday and Friday. It's been organized by a whole bunch of great community members. And it was started because David Ort now told Dan Siegel on Twitter he should do it. So he did. And Daniel Koser, again, had written a blog on 5 reasons you have to be there. I think they're great. I mean, the first one being community driven. I think that's awesome. And the other blog here is Dylan, and he's just talking about how great it is as well. So I know James and I will be there. David will be there. He'll be back from vacation. A whole bunch of your Xamarin folks that you're familiar with will be there, and also our great community members. So a whole bunch of people. And I love this picture of food in Houston. I'm very excited. So there's still some tickets left. It's not too late. And I think there's still availability at the hotel. So if you really want to go, like, now's the time. Book your ticket. It's going to be great. We have some great announcements on the keynote on the first day. So finally, release notes for Xamarin Forms 4.1. So it's out. You can get it on NuGet. I think it came out Monday. And we have a whole bunch new in this release. We have some WPF stuff, some macOS stuff, and a bunch of things in preview, including Collection View, which we've added a lot of work to. So definitely check it out. As usual, we have our fantastic thank you, which is the new thing we've been doing with release notes. Look at this list of contributors. It's amazing. These are all the people who have contributed to 4.1. So huge release. Definitely pull it down. And you can always see the API changes really easily with the release notes.
Am I on that list? I want to know. My checkbox.
I don't know.
I need
you
to know.
You should be.
Probably not.
Maybe not.
No, you didn't make it.
I didn't make the cut.
You didn't make the cut for this one.
Is the checkbox in this release?
Yeah, checkbox is in there. I'm already using it in one of my apps.
There you go.
Checkbox all day.
632. Uh-oh.
I guess I work at Microsoft, so I'm not really a community contributor, but I like to think
I think that's what's going on.
Yeah.
That's true.
Which is good. I do want to say that it was my largest out there. And Robert asked, when will it go out? It's already out, Robert. It's out. It's available out there. And yes, checkbox is available. And that's the most important thing that has happened in my life in at least the last 5 years. So.
And I mean, you know why we resisted checkbox initially, right?
Oh, I know. Well, it's hard. It's a hard one because the iOS implementation, there is nothing on iOS.
Well, it's just that, you know, part of the idea is that it forces, the idea was to force people into thinking of alternative user interface elements, right? Or what would you do if you didn't have that? That's the reason why we didn't do it, to kind of promote people building more native looking apps.
But now you got a checkbox, and that's all I ever wanted, Miguel. It happened.
Yeah, I guess life finds a way. Life finds a way, right?
It's the circle of checkbox life.
Checkboxes find a way.
They do. Well, thank you, Maddie, so much. I know you got to probably head out, and you have a hard stop here. But thank you so much, Maddie. Thanks to all the awesome community members, too, for all the awesome contributions. So let's just hop into it. So iOS 13 preview, it's out. Is that correct? We have a preview available?
Yes, we do have a preview for Xcode Beta 2. Of course, Apple decided to drop an Xcode Beta 3. So you can try out. You're going to find a small issue where we added a framework that later was removed in Beta 3. So if you bump your Xcode to Beta 3, make sure you're using the linker, and that will allow you to make Xcode 11 applications without having an empty error telling you that the framework was not found in Xcode 11 Beta 3. But yeah, it's out. You can try out. You can start writing applications, start using some of the new frameworks that we added, and everything will be fine. Should be able to deploy to an Xcode, an iOS 13 device as well, and test it with your simulator.
So I think a lot of people may not understand how it works, right? Like, how does Apple does a drop of Xcode and then magically people install preview bits and things work? But I think that a lot of people don't understand like the magic that your team and the team does to make this all happen. So I figure like maybe you could take us through the process, either Manuel, you or Alex, if you want to take through the process of like, how does this magic actually come together? Because I know it's not easy necessarily, but we were talking before, you said it's not as hard to get in and look at it and start contributing too. So do you want to kind of walk us through a little bit of like how this magic comes together? And I'll monitor the chat. And I'll monitor the chat rooms too. If people have questions, okay, feel free. Or if anyone else wants to chime in, go for it. So go for it.
So we were talking previously, and we think that we don't have that many contributors because the word bindings sounds scary, which is understandable, but it's not as scary as you may think. All right. So what we usually do in the team, we usually call this like the Xcode 11 season. For some reason in my brain, I make the analogy with the hunting season. Just pictures of cells with guns after frameworks. So this is Xcode 11. We are in Xcode season, and we do all our work on GitHub. So I'm going to share my screen so you can see our project. And ideally, I'm going to tell you where is everything and how do we work with things, right? So most of the work happens in a specific branch. So since we're working with Xcode 11, would be the Xcode 11 branch, which we branch from our latest stable, and we start adding there all the new frameworks, right? So what the very first thing that the team does is look at the differences between the different Xcodes and the different betas. So the fastest and easiest way to see where we're at is through the wiki of the project and GitHub. So if you go to the wiki, you'll see that we have a bindings heading here, and you can go and check out where the bindings status is for this specific Xcode version. So the way we deal with this is we generate diffs of the headers of each of the frameworks. So for example, if you want to find something that has all your toolbox, you can click on it and you'll see all the diffs. Don't get scared. We'll get, like Alex is going to explain better how do we do with this. So what we do is we use this table, which is auto-generated, and here at the bottom, you'll see explains how to deal with it. What we are doing is we are providing the diffs of each beta so that we can see what changed. And then you'll see here that I'm Mandel. What we usually do is put a developer's name next to the framework he's working on so that we don't step on each other. It would be very annoying if, you know, you're working on a framework and then someone else is working on the same framework and you got two PRs.
Yeah, and what I'm seeing here is it's like when you say X, like people just think iOS 13, like this is not just iOS 13 for the phone, but this is everything. And also, I assume I've gotten a billion questions about iPadOS. Like, that's just iOS, right? That's part of it. Like, everyone is like, is Xamarin supporting iPadOS? I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's just a marketing name. But
yeah, let me take a step back just here. The essentially what we do when Xcode season, as Manuel calls it, well, we do call it that, when the Xcode season starts, is we looked at what changed in the APIs because we want to make sure that .NET developers have access to everything, right? So like when Em was saying, the changes in the platform are done in all of these frameworks. And that's what you see on the left side column, which framework. So which changes did, for example, I'm looking at the, let's take a look at the row close to the bottom. Well, no, that says nothing. Authentication services, right? This is the new stuff that Apple introduced for sign-in, right? So that row. And essentially, we track all the changes that Apple does on the beta 1, the beta 2, and the beta 3, right? And we have to track this across the board. That's why there are four columns, one for each of the platforms that Xcode supports. And what you see, you know, you can compare that there's two sets of cells, right? In authentication services, there's the PR. That's a link to an actual pull request where somebody in the team already did the work. And what we try to do is we want to have multiple eyes take a look at the patch, right? So we no longer just commit directly. Instead, we ask folks in the team to review it and make sure that we follow our own conventions, that we you know, we use the proper naming and things like that. And it used to be that that we could just there was one or two people that did the binding, but now there are more people working on this. We kind of have to look after each other. So that's why we do it now through pull requests, and we get a chance to review the tests, review any potential failures. And then the ones that have question marks or nothing, we haven't yet, nobody has taken on those yet. So we're essentially, this is the way that we allocate the work across the organization.
And, yeah, we usually try, if you see beta 1 and beta 2, if beta 3 came out, we usually try to fill those ones that were already present in the preview to keep up with beta 3. So for example, this audio toolbox that has a question mark has more, it's more important than adding, for example, AppKit, which has no bindings just yet for Xcode 11. Sorry if I interrupted, but that was a nice detail.
Okay, so those question marks are like, we think that there's something in those changes, or are there just no PR yet for it? Got it.
So it means that no one took it. So no one took ownership of doing it, but we do know that there is a diff. So if you click in B1, B2, B3, it'll take you to a diff, and over there you can see all the differences in the headers.
I see. So if I'm coming in and I download the preview, I can say, oh, this is against preview 2, so it may not have anything for AppKit yet because there's no PR done on it, basically.
Correct.
Got
exactly.
It.
If you see, for example, the one that was mentioned by Miguel, authentication services has been updated up to beta 3. And if you want to find out if you landed, you can click on the PR and it probably, well, I think it's merged. Sebastian merged this one. So you can see, obviously, the changes that happen, usually the betas, the smaller the changes, obviously. If we, for example, have something like AppKit where it has no PR previously, you're going to have a larger PR because we're going to try to get from 1 to 3 in a single PR. So ideally, if you want to know, hey, is this framework supported in the preview? Quick way to do it is get into the wiki. Also, if you want to contribute with frameworks, it's also a very nice way to say, okay, I'm very interested, I don't know, in Context UI or Core Audio. And so I'd like to take a look and see how I could do the binding, which I'm going to let Alex explain how it works. You can easily go to the wiki and say, okay, I'm going to pick up Core Audio. I'm going to see what the header differences are. In this case, they just moved the header. So you'll see that there's a lot of noise sometimes with the diffs because either they're moving headers from one point to another one or they're changing availabilities. So they change the attribute or the macro that it's used to tell you if it's available on iOS or available on TVOS and so on and so forth. So I'm going to let Alex explain more or less what the process of creating a binding, because it's not as scary as it sounds. And I think that a lot of people think that we're doing crazy pbooks and lots of really like low-level stuff, but we are not in that point. It's a lot easier. So Alex, if you want to take over.
Sure. Let me share my screen.
Yeah, I think this is cool because I never really realized of how much detail on that Wikipedia page is actually available at any given time. Maybe it's just me being naive and not going to wiki pages on GitHub ever, but like to actually see it being used and then going through and like actually being able to track every single change is like really helpful. So that's really cool.
Yeah, and also something that I would like to add to Manuel's explanation is that you don't actually have to wait for the previews. If you go directly to our Xcode 11 branch and click on commits, if you want to get into the latest bits, you can just click on the red crosses and download the Xamarin Mac or Xamarin iOS package.
Oh, so the packages are there in the yep. in the commits.
Yes.
Oh.
So as long as it's merged, you should be able to download the packages. So this is really handy.
that is like the at your own risk. This is, you know, completely rare. Like, you know, it's been merged, but it's not like in an official release. It's like go to town, go for it if you want to live on the edge type of thing. Is that accurate?
Totally correct.
But you know that. There's so many tests that pass, you know, first of all of our regular tests pass when we do these merges. There's the human validation that also takes place, but also we have built frameworks that compare our internal use of the API against the public API, just to make sure that we don't violate any rules from Apple. We scan for coverage, for completeness. So the reality is that these builds that you get out of here, they are pretty good. So it's yes. not, I mean, these have been, we've built so much infrastructure to make sure that we eliminate as much human error as possible that this is what I typically use. I just go and download one of these puppies myself.
Yeah,
and you can see mostly, that we have device tests as well. So yes. Alex, if you saw it there, you can see that we were running all our tests also in a real device with the iOS beta that's being under development. So we've tested this on a device. It won't catch fire.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, will not catch fire.
Will not catch fire.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, basically, they are good to go. So, okay. What I wanted to know, what I wanted to do before actually going into the binding process, since we were talking about community contributors, I want to give a big shout out to Jonathan Conte. He has been contributing to our repository for the last month. So we are really happy to get any kind of contributions, whether it's directly into the code or to make our repository even cleaner. So please contribute, come. And also, if you want to get started on it, we have our contributing guide right here. So you can follow the steps and you should be able to get Xamarin iOS built from source. And if you have any questions, we actually hang out on Gear right here, so you can join or chat, and we will answer all your questions about how to get our code running, you know? So, that said, I want to look at this PencilKit PR, which has been recently merged. And what it has is basically the changes that Apple introduced into this new framework. So what I want you to see in more detail is that this is going to be a best example, actually. For example, this is CarPlay, okay? And what Apple gives us is it's a header, an Objective-C header right here. And what you have to do is actually create, let's call it our own header version, but in C#. And it's based on C# interfaces. So what we really do is map the Objective-C header into a C# representation of it. If you see, we just do interface CPLR action, which is the actual name of the Objective-C object. And we have the same name here in C#. we see that it has properties right here. So in our description, C# description file, we have the same properties with these attributes on top that actually map from the C# name to the actual Objective-C name. So what you basically do is map these two, blend these two C# files, and we will take this file and actually, as Manuel said, generate the actual interoperability code for you. So you don't have to write all this scary code by yourself to call into Objective-C.
So you take kind of like when you're like, oh, I'm going to go take a CarPlay, for instance, and there maybe is a diff, maybe they added a single new API. So really, you just add a new API or a new property into it, and then there's automagic stuff that happens. Like, so the on the right-hand side, that stuff's done manually. Is that what you're saying? And then the craziness is all auto-generated?
Correct.
Gotcha. And then so all those little attributes like no watch, no TV or whatever, those are all kind of Xamarin
things.
Yeah,
so correct. And you can find documentation about that. We can post the links later. Here in your binding Objective-C libraries documentation, there is a complimentary guide to this one, because this one actually introduces you into the binding process. So we have this binding times reference guide, which is the actual documentation on what does each attribute mean. So for example, we have base type here, and we have a little explanation of what base type means. So yeah, so basically you have to go to read these two documents, and then you should get a little understanding of how full binding process works.
Well, and I guess the nice thing is that since all of iOS is bound already, you could literally just take one of them, like look at what this CarPlay one is, and then it's probably very similar, right? You know, kind of as new APIs arise.
Correct. Yeah, it's for new frameworks, it's where the big chunk of work is. But for existing frameworks, you can just like you said, they just added a bunch of new objects or new properties. So it's easier from an existing framework point of view.
Now, does this all have to be done manually, or is there some like generator tool in general that can kind of like help out if people are getting started?
So we have a tool called Objective Sharpie, which you can actually find here in the binding headers. This is actually useful for actually this tool works not only for bindings, but you can actually throw any third-party library that you want to bind to it, and it will give you a starting point. It won't give you like a 100% like a binding project per se. So it will give you something for you to work on. You know, it will, for example, here it will give you this is a starting point. The output of Objective Sharpie, but you have to come and make a more C# friendly API by yourself. Like, for example, you can get init with title style handler, and then the name will be something like init with title, and you don't want that. You want something like create or get title, or, you know, I don't know if that makes sense. So Objective Sharpie, it gives you just a starting point.
Got it. Okay, it's going to be like a loose translation, kind of.
Correct. But it's pretty accurate, because since we have to go from the managed to unmanaged side, you can rest assured that this information, which is like the critical information that we need to interop with Objective-C, will be correct. So Objective Sharpie will output that information correctly. All you have to do is make that interface file more C# friendly.
Gotcha.
Like following what Alex says, we don't only rely on that What we usually try to do is, if there's, for example, it's a very common thing in Apple, which is we take an NS dictionary with certain options, right? And those options are a constant NS string and some value. And usually that value is an NS object and you don't know anything about it. And that's a pain in the ass if you're a .NET developer, because you want to have like a nicer API. So for example, we create what we call strong dictionaries, where for example, we create objects or classes that will allow you to have properties to set to that dictionary. And then in the background, we convert that into an NS dictionary. So for example, if you were, you were going to do something with audio tools, which I've been working on recently, there are certain things that you have to pass for the buffer to work. And that's a pain in the ass if you get the NS dictionary, because you need to know which key, you need to know what kind of value goes in that key. So if you go through our sources, you'll see that a lot of times we try to clean up that stuff, because it would be a nightmare to be just passing random things. So we, on top of the export and the availability attributes, there's a lot of stuff that we try to do manually. There's also certain classes that we bound manually. I think Alex can show a couple of them. So usually the pattern is, if you go to our sources, you'll see the framework name.cs, and that has the interfaces, which I consider them as contracts for the generator to write the code. And then you'll see a directory with the same name of the framework. And there you can see our manual bindings. Most of the time, the manual binding is for very low level stuff that's still using C. So CF network, or you can see there, for example, the NS0 session handler, which is what's passed to the HTTP client and things like that. So if you want to say, I want to contribute to bindings, first look at those attributes for the generator to pick up and generate your frameworks. And then later try to look at what we're doing in our manual bindings. And also this is really interesting. Alex, do you know the pipe I had? Because it's really interesting to look at the generate code, because it's very interesting. And you can see how we're sending messages to the different objects, and how we're making sure that we have, like, for example, null allowed. So we'll make sure that we don't check against null pointers when you don't have the attribute to have. Like, if you could show that, because I think it's like the most interesting part, because the generator does a lot of, I think, amazing stuff.
Yeah, and also, if you have any questions, you can come to the Gitter channel with them, and we will try to do our best to answer them.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool, because I know that, like, what was I doing recently? So you're saying, like, right now, I know, like, when I use MapKit, there's like a dictionary of addresses that you need to pass them. I know in iOS, I think that has really nice, like, you can use the contact bindings to be like, this is the street name, the zip code, and things like that. And I think in tvOS, in our bindings, they're not there. So, like, if I wanted to, I'm a developer, I could just make a pull request for, like, the API exists for me to create the NS dictionary and put the hard-coded strings in. But, like, I could contribute, like, the constants, basically. Like, is that a thing that could happen?
Yes, and it's super easy. And if you do a pull request, I'll be very happy to review it. because if you look at the headers, there's so much stuff that we try to do our best, and we try to be super fast. But sometimes we have to prioritize, and sometimes we make mistakes, because at the end of the day, we're humans. And even though we have a lot of tests to make sure that things are working, like you don't have typos in the selectors and things like that. Sometimes, you know, humans, and we forget to do it in a platform, or we didn't think about it. So, for example, I think that one of the really nice things of being open is that if you're interested in a framework and you see that we're binding it, you can give your feedback about the API and say, well, I wouldn't do it like that in C# and things like that. So right now, we try to be very consistent, it's always nice to hear from people that are going to use the API to say, I don't really like that property name, or this doesn't really make sense, and things like that. And even giving feedback, I consider it to be a contribution. So people shouldn't be scared of saying, oh, I'm going to look at the framework, because giving feedback is also a really welcome contribution. Also, I make a lot of typos, so anyone who can catch up those ones will get a beer from me.
Those are my favorite pull requests to all my open source projects. When someone just does a pull request and fix a typo in my README or in my source code, like, that's the best, because I'll never catch it. You know what I mean? Ever.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, like what Manuel was saying about the dictionary types, like Andrew James also, it's, for example, you can map the fields here from this fields that you get in the Objective-C headers and provide actually strong types to them, like string and NUID. And this is documented, so you can come here to the documentation and actually see how to make the API even better for your libraries. So this, while we use this for the actual Xamarin iOS product and Mac, it can also be used for third-party libraries. So if you're a library vendor and you have your Objective-C SDK, you can totally use the same stuff that we use to make the C# library a pleasure to use, you know?
Yeah, so if you see and you're using an API and there's a bunch of NS strings, don't, you know, come in here and then make those strings, basically.
Correct.
Yeah. That's cool. Is there anything of the code that you wanted to show off, the generated code, a little bit to talk through that? I know Manuel was kind of talking about that, or was there something else?
Yeah, I think that would be
do you
want nice
to show something?
Show it.
Manuel?
Yeah, just show how we do. I know. I'd like to see how the generated code, for example, for our CarKit, and say, okay, we went from this interface to this generated code, and this is all the stuff that we're writing for you. Or is being generated, so that people understand it's not black magic. There's a bunch of calls that are done. There's a lot of stuff going on there, and it's always interesting to look under the hood. If you got one open, I think you did.
Yeah, I think you had one open. Yeah.
CarPlay. Yeah. Give me a second. Can you see my screen now?
Oh, you're back to yourself.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. Can you see that then?
Yep.
Awesome. So we had this CarPlay binding right here. I'm going to go back to that one. And the generated code for that actually class, let me see if I can do top bottoms, because the generated code is larger. There you go. So, for example, let's look at the interface CP alert action. So what the generator does is creates all this code and creates a class out of this interface definition. So this class is called CP alert action that inherits from NS object, because that's what the base type attribute does. It says that the default constructor is not there, so it's not generated. And it implements the NS secure coding protocol. So we give this representation as C# interfaces. That's what you can see right here. And let's look, for example, at the code generated by this property right here, which is title property. So let's see. Should be down here. Style, handle. Title. Okay, so the result of this property declared right here will be all this code. Like, for example, if you try to get the property and you are using a 32-bit device, we know that this is not present there, so we will throw an exception for you that is not present on 32-bit devices. And what we will do is we will try to get an NS string from the unmanaged code, and we will send the title message to the actual class and the pointer that we get from this particular method called inptr msSend will get translated into an actual .NET string instead of an NS string. Because in the managed side, this is an NS string. But we just handle that for you.
So it does kind of all the marshaling back and forth automatically. Is that kind of what it's doing?
Yes, correct.
Right. Let me share my screen because when you look at Discord, right, when you're looking at all this stuff, it looks like, oh my God, every time I call a method, this is a lot of code. So let me show you what I let me show you a presentation that I made a couple of years ago. That shows, how do I share this thing? How do I share my screen?
So you should be, there should be like a little share, little, it looks like a little looks like a little tablet arrow. With an arrow.
Yeah, I saw that, but then it's offering me Microsoft Team desktop. I guess, can I do desktop or window? I guess I can do desktop.
Yeah.
Let's try. Does this work?
Oh, yeah.
Do you see this?
Yeah, I see it right there. Linking 2.0.
Yeah, so what is, can I maximize this? Yeah, so when you look at a piece of code that is generated, like this one, right, it looks like a tremendous amount of junk. And let me walk you through what this is doing, right? This is taking one parameter, the section. It's calling a method that returns a CG rect. And you see all this junk, and you're thinking, good Lord, what has happened to my life, right? So what we did is that we made it so that our linker, compilers, and inliners turned this into a very optimal piece of code. So the first thing that we do is that we take care of the first if statement. You see that big, ugly if statement that says is direct binding.
You want to zoom in just a little bit more for us?
Yeah. And this thing has to do.
Perfect.
And this piece is related purely to whether you're subclassing a method or not. So this is what allows us to integrate the Objective-C object system with C#, so that you have C# has the same capabilities that Objective-C does. So this is what the sausage that Israel is showing you, that Soto Alex is showing you. And what we're going to do is we're going to kill this thing. So the first thing the linker does is bam, it kills that thing. It knows exactly at compile time which one of those two code paths are going to be executed. So we'll remove the first chunk, right? So this is actually what it's compiled. Then the next piece is we determine, hey, am I running on device or am I running on simulator, right? So this is something that we know at the execution time. So we choose one of those two code paths. Bam, there you go. So now that whole method and all that junk that is generated is down to two. Then we have this other interesting thing, right? Is this a 32-bit application or 64-bit application, right? We still have this with the watch, right? So that's what it's checking, the pointer size. Bam, right? Now we got to just one call. And now we're down to the actual marshaling, right? So we essentially eliminate everything except the one call that is needed, right? So that's very important to keep in mind. And then we're, of course, going to let the inliner do its job. But here's the next thing that we do. Debug and release, bam, we remove some of the debugging capabilities from the code. And then we notice these cute little names like selector.getHandle, right? So this looks like a method call to the untrained eye, right? But we've turned this into a .NET intrinsic. So it looks like a method call. But what happens in reality is, bam, in the native code, in the native code, we actually just inline a constant that points to a pointer in the heap, right? Mm. So what ends up happening is that you end up with a single call, right? You end up with a single call. This whole thing is a single method call where you pass a handle, a constant, and the number. That's it. And then the inliner does its job. So if the marshaling is super easy, then that's it. You inline the code into the caller side, and you can go back to having a happy life, right? And then, of course, there's a whole linking process, right? So that we do in the library, which essentially you can start with a very large application, but as you enable linking, we essentially walk through all of your dependencies, and we only keep the pieces that you need, right? So in this particular example, you're using those three balls on the left, right? Those three little balls, the gray balls, and I build together what you need. We extract it, and we end up with this very nice choo-choo train on the right. So that's how linking technology works. So, you know, I just wanted to make sure that this didn't look scarier than it actually is. We actually put a lot of work and effort into making sure that your application is as thin as possible and as performant as possible. And of course, in the end, we feed this through Apple's LVM compiler so that further inlines and optimizes the resulting code. So anyways, that's my one take when you look.
You take, you can stop sharing your screen too if you want to, there you go. So I think what's nice is in general, like you have the bits that Manuel and Alex were talking about. It's like, hey, like this is what Apple gives us. This is sort of the small chunk of code that you have to write, if I recap this, that kind of then allows all the code generator and all that stuff to put out everything that's possible, right? Then the linker stuff goes in, right?
Exactly. So our job is essentially to map the Objective-C conventions to .NET conventions because there were a couple of efforts. I mean, we're not the first ones that bind Objective-C over the years, but if you look at how, if you just to do a simple mapping, the results are terrible. The APIs are difficult to use. They're not well named. They don't follow the .NET calling conventions, the naming conventions. So, you know, it makes for harder discoverability for our users, right? So we want to have something that is consistent with .NET on the naming side. Then we also want to use some key .NET types for interrupt, right? So we want to use .NET URLs, and we're going to use .NET strings and all that stuff, so that essentially you can interrupt more easily. And the other thing that we do is we want to make the API compose well with .NET. And what I mean by that is, for example, collections will be ionumerable. So that means that you can for each on them, or you can link over those properties. We want to make them return tasks. So any async method, we flag it specially, so it returns an async task. So that means that you can either pass a callback like people would do, 50 or 100 years ago, or you can just use async and await. Right. So we make sure that not only we do the naming, but everything that would interrupt properly with the platform so that you compose these things, or collection initializers that lets you use all the native APIs of the Apple platform with collection initializers, for example. Right. So that's the kind of work that we have to do. And one part is naming, one part is mapping, and there are other parts that where we spice up the API, right? And make sure that it composes well.
Nice. Robert was asking in the chat if those slides were from a private, internal presentation, or those publicly available
the linker. These are publicly available. These are actually my slides. I had to find them right now because I just got scared when I saw that screenshot. It's making it look horrible, and we put so much effort into making it good. No. These are public slides from the .NET conference 2016.
I'll put a link into the show notes on YouTube.
I'll be happy to give you a copy of my stuff. I can send you the PPT. I mean, it's all public. Yeah. We've had this day, but you know, as we go into the, some of the stuff there is obviously 3 years old, so no longer applies. Oh my God, we're talking about bait and switch. Well, still relevant.
Still relevant. Yeah.
We're still talking about pickles. Not relevant.
No.
Anyways.
Nice. Well, is there anything else in this release you wanna talk about? Because I just noticed that the blog post is up. So iOS 13 preview release. I'll put that into the show notes as well. And boom.
I think the most important thing that we're trying to achieve right now and trying to... When we looked at what was being worked on or what was not being worked on, you might think, why are they working on this alphabetically or some other way? And the way that we're prioritizing the work is anything that our developers will need to meet the new requirements from Apple is what we are putting up front, right? That's why we got authentication services in there very early on, because Apple is saying, hey, if you ever put a Google sign-in page or a Facebook page, you must add Apple ID, right? So this is not a suggestion. This is a requirement, right? So our developers, I mean, everybody's going to have to adopt this. So we're front-loading all the things that are mandatory changes so that you can get access on the early previews to all of these things and you can plan accordingly. This is why we did this release this week. This is why, you know, as Manuel was saying earlier today, we released with beta 2 and Apple shortly released beta 3. It's okay. It still works. No problem. But this is why we did it, right? We didn't want to hold back anything because we know that people need some of these APIs right away. There are APIs that we need now for multi-window management, UiScene. So if you have an iPad app, you must start using UiScene. Lots of little things like that. So this is what we front-loaded, and we have a team of folks just going through the what is the most urgent thing that you as a Xamarin user need to start testing now. And then we'll get, you know, I think in a month you'll see that we'll start working on more of the happy, you know, optional features. And by the time we ship, you'll get everything. But we want to make sure that you have enough time to prepare for the Apple requirements.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. So, in general, so I like that. Yeah, people can get their hands on it right now. They can go and test it. Especially, you're right, because some people need the ability to get access to that stuff. But then I like that Alex just showed that, hey, there's, you want something new, just grab it from the pull request, right? Just grab the bits. Now, I'm imagining here, like, what are the requirements for the iOS 13 preview?
What do you mean? Requirements from...
Like, do I need special Visual Studios? Do I need special Mac versions? Like, you know, what's the requirements on this puppy?
The reality is you don't need a new Mac version and unless you're doing Mac software, right? Unless you want to use something new on Catalina, but... you know, I'll tell you my horror stories of my Catalina experience another day, but I would suggest that you stay on Mojave unless you have a dedicated machine for Catalina.
Okay.
So stay with Mojave. That's the first order bit. Then you do need to get our previews by selecting the preview channel and on Visual Studio for Mac. And then you need to get the Xcode 11 Beta 3.
That will install in Mojave.
Yeah, and we're gonna get the Visual Studio 2019 preview. You know, the tooling that goes with the Windows version soon out. We haven't completed that work, so stay tuned. But for now, do it on the Mac. Do it on Mojave, and I think we can fill a show with with what happened to me. It's partly my fault, so I don't want to blame anybody else.
You're probably not the only one. I was talking to Frank, and he said, I had a machine, and now I no longer have a machine. Thank you, Catalina. So
so actually, you should get me in touch with I should talk to him because I figured out how to recover all the data. But there's some courageous changes in Catalina, and courage comes at a price. Now, your data is there, and I can help him recover it, but, you know, I... stay with Mojave if you're developing mobile apps for now.
Someone was asking, so we were showing like Objective-C APIs, right, being bound. What happens with Swift-only frameworks? And are there actually Swift-only frameworks from Apple?
There is one. There is one called, oh my God, I can't remember what it's called, but it's one of these new AR libraries.
RealityKit.
Oh, RealityKit.
Yeah, so we will support it, not in this first preview, but we have a tool that we're very close to releasing. It's a tool that we've been working on for a couple of years now. And we haven't released it because by the time we're ready, I'll tell you what it is. It's called Swift-O-Matic. So Swift-O-Matic, it's very neat because it works with binary files and produce binaries that work directly with the Swift bindings. But you might not know this, but Swift has not had a stable ABI up until, I think, a couple of months ago, right? So what that means in human is that essentially Swift was broken or torn every, you know, 6 months to a year, right? So as soon as we were like, okay, we're done, a week later it would be broken, right? So Apple has finally stabilized the ABI, which means no more breakage. And now we're just putting the finishing touches on it, and we should be able to ship Swift-O-Matic soon. So you'll be able to have access to the whole catalog of Swift APIs very soon, very soon. I know I've said this before, but this time I mean it. I mean, I always meant it, but this time, this time Apple has promised they won't break us again. So, so we'll get it soon.
Lovely. Well, there you go, Dennis. There you go. All your answers. We'll definitely make sure you follow our blog. We'll definitely always tweet out all the and blog all the awesome stuff we go. And Jean-Marc says, thanks for awesome for all the awesome job that the team does. He super appreciates it. So I know I do. I'm excited to I'm excited to make the iOS jump this fall. I don't know, officially. I might be getting an iPhone 13. Signing with Apple has me won over. I'm just saying, Miguel, I might be joining the iOS family.
But I have to say, James, you portray me as a partisan, but I mean, I guess I buy iPhones by six packs, but I do own a bunch of Androids, and I do carry an Android with me every day. Not today, because my kids, anyways, long story. My Pokemon Go account is on that thing, and the kids are on vacation, so they hijacked my Android this morning. But we can be multi-platform, James. You and I, you can enjoy the best of both worlds.
I'm gonna have to have two phones in my pocket at all times, aren't I? I'm gonna have to.
Okay, so triplets.
Yeah, well, I have triplets. That's my work phone and my personal phone.
That's true. Maybe I could get one that's Intune. That'll be maybe what I'll do. So some great things. Jerome says, thanks for all the great details about the bindings. Thanks. Hawk says, from iOS to GUI CS, love all the work that the team does. So we'll have to do a show on GUI CS sometimes. That'd be fun.
No. Let's just focus. There's so much interesting stuff happening right now on mobile. We should really do a couple of deep dives on some of the interesting stuff that is coming to Android and iOS.
Yes, absolutely. That's what the stand-ups for is, what their blogs for, and also for the Xamarin Show. I want to have all the teams on. I do want to also mention here really quick. I'll go to my machine. Miguel sat down. I watched this. This Building Careers. It came out just this week. Behind the scenes with Miguel. It was very good. It's 45 minutes, well worth your time, on Channel 9 and on the Microsoft Developer YouTube. So that was a fun watch.
Yeah, it was a fun interview. I don't remember what I said, but it was a fun interview. And I refused to listen to my voice. So
I learned even more back history of you, obviously, but also of Xamarin and Mono and on everything too, because I knew some, but then I learned a lot more. So,
well, it's like an elephant, right? I mean, if every time I sit down with folks in the team, including you, everybody had a different view of what Xamarin was, right? So it's interesting to listen to the stories from everybody, right? So yeah. Alex had a different view, Manuel had a different view, Sebastian had a different view. So it's always good to hear all the sides of how things came to be.
Yeah.
All right.
Anything else from you folks?
Just one mention, kill 32-bit applications on macOS if you want to be ready for Catalina. Because when we were going through the generated code, that I remember we didn't mention this, your 32-bit application on Catalina, if you still have them on Mac, I believe we did a blog post. Do remember that's disappearing. I mean, we can grab the blog somewhere. It was written by Chris Hammonds and explains the reasons, mostly Apple. So please, if you want to be ready for Catalina, start working on that.
Perfect. Yeah, I'll also put that link to the blog post from Chris in the show notes about making the jump. I think we just did it not too much ago. Chris and David worked on that. Yeah, you don't get that app is not optimized. But are you saying in Catalina it won't even?
In Catalina it won't even launch.
Nope.
Not even Xcode 9.4 will launch in Catalina. So you've been warned. Probably not the best time to say when you were closing the show, but I felt better. Better now than ever.
It's good to remember. Yeah, don't forget. Awesome. Well, thanks. Yeah. Anything from you, Alex?
Yeah. Just to make sure everyone that we always do our best work to create these delightful APIs for you to use.
Well, I know that everyone in the chat room is loving it, and thanks everyone for your hard work, and thanks for you three for joining. I really appreciate it and getting behind the scenes, because sometimes, you know, I don't get to see behind the scenes of how the awesomeness is generated. So I'm super appreciative on this. I know the community loves it as well. So thanks for taking time out of your days. Thanks for everyone for tuning in. Of course, you can watch this on YouTube later on if you desire. But yeah, thanks, Alex and Manuel and Miguel. Thank you so much for joining.
No problem.
Thank you, James.
Bye.
Have a good one.
All right. Cheers, everyone. Make sure that you subscribe to Twitch, to the YouTube, so you get notified of all the .NET community standups. Have a great holiday if it's your 4th of July here in the United States, or have a great weekend, and cheers.